The Nile River is the longest river in the entire world. It's about 4,000 miles in length. And this is a composite of satellite pictures. And you notice how much of Africa is very green. But as you get north, you're in dry, sandy desert. Now, I'll take a close-up here because the longer oblong shape is showing the length of the Nile River. But then as you look up at the top, enclosed within it is the Jordan River. It's very easy to see how it is that Egypt has a very stable water supply. Because you could have a drought in Egypt, which they normally do. It doesn't rain. It rains even less there than it does in Phoenix. It hardly ever rains there. They go years without rain. But still, the Nile River gives them a steady source of water. And that's because of how long it is and the fact that it goes through areas that receive a lot of moisture. And as you notice the map, the southern portion of Africa is very green because of all of the moisture. The Nile River is one of the few major rivers in the world that goes northward, and it goes through the desert regions. Now notice, here with this close-up, you still have green along the river because they irrigate and there are crops there. But then again, you notice how short the Nile, how short the Jordan River is, that it is smaller than that circle up at the top. As a result, Israel, before they had any dams or the ability to dig really deep wells, was extremely sensitive to drought. Egypt hardly knew what a drought was. Now, you remember, in our previous study, we considered how there were going to be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of great famine. That was a totally new concept for the Egyptians. God had revealed in dreams that this is what was going to happen, and he used Joseph to interpret those dreams. The Egyptians were not used to anything along this line, so they were not used to storing up grain. They figured, well, next year we'll have plenty of grain. Plenty of grain the year after, and so forth. Joseph had them store up grain during the 7 years of plenty, and as a result, they were the only place in the ancient world that had an adequate food supply during the 7 years of drought. The passage we are going to consider is when the drought hit Israel. And obviously, with the small water supply that they had, they were hit quickly, and they had not prepared, they had not stored up food to get them through such a severe drought. So now let's do the formal introduction. All of us are familiar with the story of the boy who cried wolf, and there was no wolf. And the whole town came out in order to go find the bad wolf. There was no wolf. The boy cried wolf once again. Same thing happened. Everybody came out. But then there was that day that there really was a wolf, and he cried wolf, and nobody came. Interestingly enough, we're going to find something very much along that line within our chapter, Genesis 42. So let's start at the beginning, and sooner or later we'll find out about the little boy who cried wolf. In verses 1 through 5, upon running out of grain, Jacob sent his sons, except Benjamin, to buy grain in Egypt. Why did they go to Egypt? Well, the newspapers gave indication that there was lots of grain there in Egypt. You know, they heard it on CNN. And you know, they tune into the internet and they found out there's a lot of food there. Well, it doesn't take long to find out that there's a place where there's plenty of food. It travels through the grapevine rather quickly that Egypt had a lot of food. There was lots and lots of food there, but they heard, of course, that the prices were a little high. So, Jacob heard that there was food in Egypt. They had run out of food themselves, so he sent his sons to go there, except he held on to his favored son, Benjamin. Let's look at verses 1 through 2. Upon running out of grain, Jacob sent his sons to Egypt to buy grain. When Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" And he said, "Indeed, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy for us there that we may live and not die." He said, "What are you doing sitting on your seats, doing nothing? It's obvious what needs to happen. Egypt has food. Go down there and buy some." And they got the point. They went down there. But notice how serious this is, as verse 2 ends up, that we may live and not die. Their no food situation was pretty serious. I'd like to make a point here for the original readers. The original readers of Genesis. There they were in Egypt. There were leeks and there were garlic. They had all the food that they wanted, right? Egypt was still a place of plenty. And where were they going to go? Well, they were going to go to a land flowing with milk and honey. But how were they going to get there? They were going to be out in a wilderness. And the God who was able to provide for the Israelites through how he worked in revealing to Joseph the meaning of Pharaoh's dreams was also the God that was going to be able to provide for the Israelites as they were in the wilderness. God is still a God who is sovereign. God is omnipotent. And he is truthful. When he says something, he keeps his promises. And the book of Genesis, as we have seen, was designed to show the Israelites of Moses' day that God was going to be just as faithful to Israel then as he had been to the patriarchs. And yes, they had a crisis here. Go down there, buy grain that we may live and not die. Well, in verses 3 and 4, Jacob did not send Benjamin along with his other sons to Egypt. So Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt, but Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, "Lest some calamity befall him." Now, as you recall, Benjamin was the second son of Rachel. She died giving birth to Benjamin. Rachel was the favored wife of Jacob. He thinks that he lost the elder son because the other son said he was torn up by a wild beast and they produced his cloak covered with animal blood. So Jacob says, "I'm not taking a chance on Benjamin getting killed. The rest of you can go on this dangerous mission down there to Egypt to buy food," but he would not allow them to take Benjamin. I can just imagine Benjamin saying, "Come on, Dad, you don't let me have any fun." But Jacob would not allow him to go down there. He didn't want anything to happen to him. In verse 5, Jacob's sons joined others who went to Egypt because of the famine. We'll notice here that it was well known that there was plenty of food down in Egypt. Verse 5, and the sons of Israel, the sons of Jacob, went to buy grain among those who journeyed, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. There were others that were working their way down there, and they had heard there's plenty of food down there. People would have known that going to Egypt was a good place to go in times of famine. You remember back in Genesis chapter 12? Remember what happened there? Let's go back there. Let's go back to Genesis 12. I've been working hard at trying to keep the whole book in everyone's memories. But in Genesis chapter 12, God made promises to Abraham. And we've spent quite a bit of time looking at Genesis chapter 12, verses 2 and 3. But where I would like you to look in this chapter is starting at verse 10. Now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to dwell there, for the famine was severe in the land. Notice the dependability of the Nile River is something that was well known. You could always go to Egypt. You could always buy food there. But you can imagine, here these brothers are going down to Egypt. And Egypt, even in the normally lush Nile Valley, everything's parched. But there's lots of food. The Nile wasn't as dependable as it normally was. But God was still faithful. But they knew Egypt was a place to go during times of famine. And we see many occasions in the Bible where there are famines in Israel, and where do they go? They go to Egypt. They could count on there being food there. But this time, there wouldn't have been any food there if God had not revealed the interpretation of Pharaoh's dreams to Joseph. But there are a lot of people going down there in order to buy food. And Jacob's sons, all of them except Benjamin, went down there in order to purchase food. Now in verses 6 through 20, we have where they've actually arrived, and they are going to encounter Joseph, who is the number two man in all of Egypt. He's the one in charge of the storage and the distribution of the food. So in verses 6 through 20, Joseph knew his brothers. He recognized them. He accused them as spies. He imprisoned them as spies and held Simeon, one of the sons, to ensure that they would return with Benjamin to vindicate themselves. Since they are being accused as spies and they proclaim their innocence, Joseph set up a test. But he didn't want them just to ignore it, so he made sure to say, well, I'm going to keep one of you brothers here, and the rest of you, if you ever want to see him ever again, you're going to need to come back, and you need to have that youngest son. Well, let's see how this unfolds. Joseph accused his brothers as spies. Verses 6 through 9. Now Joseph was governor over the land, and it was he who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him with their faces to the earth. Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, and he acted as a stranger to them and spoke roughly to them, and he said to them, where do you come from? And they said, from the land of Canaan, to buy food. Now we see here that he is governor, and he's in charge of selling the food that has been stored up. He was the one that was put in charge of storing up the food by Pharaoh because they didn't know about such procedures. They needed to have someone that was wise in these matters, and they put him in charge. And so he knew that his brothers would eventually show up. Eventually, they'd run out of food. And what did they do? Look at the end of verse 6. They came and they bowed down before him with their faces to the earth. Does this remind you of anything? Well, let's take a look back in Genesis chapter 37. We'll start at verse 1. Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. They didn't act like the landlords, they acted like tenants. It was the people, the Canaanites, that really were in control. And yet God has made promises that this is their land and it's their land forever. These are the generations of Jacob. More literal rendering, that's one of those Toledot statements here in the book of Genesis. This is where we're now going to see Jacob's offspring, in particular Joseph, receiving attention. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. As you remember, Jacob had children through four women. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Here he is, the youngest one, the favored one, and he's sent out to spy on his brothers. And he comes back, he says, "Dad, they're not doing what they're supposed to do." And you can imagine how popular that made him with the rest of the brothers. Especially since he was the one born to Rachel, and they were all born to women that Jacob didn't think as highly of. Now Israel, Jacob, loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now, Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers. And they hated him even more. So he said to them, "Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright, and indeed your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf." Kind of looks like this passage is being fulfilled right here, doesn't it? They all came to him and they bowed down before him. But Joseph knows this isn't the final fulfillment. Because look at how it goes from there. And his brothers, verse 8, said to him, "Shall you indeed reign over us? Or shall you indeed have dominion over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed still another dream and told it to his brothers and said, "Look, I have dreamed another dream. And this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me." So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you?" And his brothers envied him. But his father kept the matter in mind. Now, actually, this was a revelation from God. But they didn't like it. None of the family liked this dream, did they? They all thought it was just the most awful thing that could possibly happen. But at this particular juncture, they are all hungry. They're on the verge of starvation. And they come and they bow down before this one who has food for them. You know, that's often that way. We look at God's word and we say, I don't like this. But you know why we don't like it? We don't have the bigger picture. The brothers didn't like it. They didn't yet have the bigger picture. They didn't have the context. They were thinking, oh, you're saying that you're going to be over us? That doesn't sound good at all. But in this chapter, they're thinking, I'd rather be alive and bow down to this Egyptian than to be dead by not bowing down to him and not getting any food. Now, they don't know it's Joseph. But you notice, it's going to be not only the brothers, but Jacob himself is going to bow down and receive benefit. So let's go back to Genesis 42. In verse 7, Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them. Now, they've obviously gotten a little older, but he still knows who they are. And he acted as a stranger to them. When it says that he spoke roughly to them, he spoke through an interpreter, we'll find out later. He didn't give any indication that he understood Hebrew at all. But he spoke roughly to them. Now, I have a picture here to sort of illustrate this. We're all familiar with Jesus speaking about the wolf with sheep's clothing. But Joseph here is really a sheep with wolf's clothing. He's really looking out for his brothers, but he is acting like the heavy. He's dealing with them in a way that they would expect for a governor to deal with them. They think that they know what's going on, but they don't have half a clue. They don't know half of what is going on. Well, you notice in verse 8, so Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them and said to them, you are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land. Now, isn't this interesting? The shoe's on the other foot, isn't it? Because what did they think of him when he came out when their father sent him to go and check on them? He's spying on them, and he's going to give back an evil report. Notice how the shoe has just gone on the other foot. He says, he doesn't say it this way, Dad sent you to spy. Very interesting. The artistry here, the sense of humor that God has is amazing. So now they are accused as spies. Joseph remembers the dreams. Joseph remembered dreams before. Because you remember when the butler and the baker came to him? And they were, you know, he said, why are you so sad? We both had dreams and no one can interpret the dreams. Joseph said that was something for them not to worry about. God had enabled Joseph to interpret dreams. How is it that he's able to confidently say that he could give them the answer? Well, clearly, he had not ceased believing the dreams that God had given him when he was young, when he was 17 years old. And he remembers the dreams. And he's seeing God is putting the jigsaw pieces together, and they are ultimately going to be fulfilled. Well, in verses 10 through 13, the brothers defended themselves. Their defense was their family plight, talking about how they were 12 brothers and one is no more and one is there with dad. And we certainly are getting hungry these days because there's no food. We've come here to buy food. We didn't come here to spy. You know, we're not a military force. We're just looking out for our poor family that's lost one son. And I mean, we're in hard straits here. Verses 10 through 13. They said to him through the interpreter, "No, my lord, but your servants, the ones who bow down to you, have come to buy food. We are all one man's sons." They didn't say that we're all sons of one woman, but they're all sons of one man. "We are honest men." Okay. Well, they've got a high opinion of themselves in this way. "Your servants are not spies." But he said to them, "No, but you have come to see the nakedness of the land. You've come to figure out where we're weak and how you can attack us." And they said, "Your servants are 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And in fact, the youngest is with our son today, and one is no more." Joseph says, "Your 12 sons and one's at home, 12 minus 1 equals 11. Let's see, how many do I see? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So he says, "Tell me about your math here. You know, your 12 sons, one's at home. So obviously we get into a situation where they're going to have to say, well, there was sort of this accident. Something happened to one of them. Something happened to Joseph." At this point, they're not going to divulge anything more than they have to divulge. They want to just keep this as cursory as possible. So their defense is, "No, we're not spies. We're hungry people coming from neighboring land. We're not all that powerful. We just are a family here that has need for some groceries. That's why we're here." Well, in verses 14 through 17, Joseph imprisoned his brothers, requiring them to bring Benjamin to vindicate themselves. Okay, if you really are this family that you say you are, and the one has been left at home, you can produce him. You can bring him. Then I'll check your story out, and you know, if that's the case, then I'll know you're not spies. But if you're spies, then you're going to just leave your brother here to rot in prison. So verses 14 through 17, "But Joseph said to them, 'It is as I spoke to you, saying, you are spies. In this manner you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you, and let him bring your brother, and you shall be kept in prison, that your words may be tested to see whether there is any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies.' So he put them all together in prison 3 days." So he said, "I don't believe you, but I'll be fair. I'll give you an opportunity to prove yourselves. We'll send one of you home, bring the youngest brother." And they're thinking, "Oh, we just went through quite a struggle with Dad. He wasn't about to let Benjamin come. And Dad doesn't really trust us with Benjamin anyway, because He's been kind of wondering what happened there that you let Joseph get eaten by a wild beast. Jacob doesn't really trust these sons to take care of the youngest brother. After all, what did he have to tell them? Why are you sitting here looking at one another? Get down to Egypt. Get some food. Jacob's thinking, I have to think for these kids. They aren't taking any initiative on their own. And last time they were all out together, one of them didn't come back. What's going to happen this time? And they're thinking, oh, that's going to be a hard sell to get Dad to let Benjamin come with us, or with the one who goes. They're not looking forward to this one. So I'm sure that they gave Joseph some excuses and said, I don't think this is going to happen. So, in verses 18 through 20, after they've been imprisoned there for 3 days, and they've had a chance to think about it, Joseph changes the offer. And he says that he's not going to just send one, but he'll send all except one. So in verses 18 through 20, Joseph held Simeon, but let the other brothers return home. Notice how history is repeating itself. Once before, Joseph went out to check up on all of his brothers. So there were 11 brothers that went out from the house. 10 went first. Joseph caught up with them. And how many came home? 10. Well, now what happens? They have a group of sons. And they all come out to Egypt. Benjamin's left at home. But one of them, Simeon, doesn't come back. So, verses 18 through 20. Then Joseph said to them the third day, "Do this and live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined to your prison house, but you go and carry grain for the famine of your houses. And bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified and you shall not die." And they did so. So Joseph has allowed them to sit there in prison for 3 days. He has left them together, as you notice in verse 17. They aren't in solitary confinement. They're able to talk with one another and try to figure out, okay, how are we going to resolve things? And so now he says, okay, it's not just one of you who's going. All of you except one. Do this and live. But what is the basis for which he says, I'm telling the truth? For I fear God. And they're thinking, how did that happen? Here's this guy in Egypt, and he fears God. So he says, well, you know, if you're honest, leave one here, and you can have all the grain that you need to take care of your families, but you need to bring Benjamin back. That will prove that you're not spies, and then you will all live rather than die. So they decide, okay, we're going to... somehow we're going to persuade Dad. You can imagine them trying to cook up a way that they could talk to Dad to get him to go along with this plan. So in verses 21 through 26, they talk to one another and they're speaking to each other in Hebrew. And since the interpreter isn't telling Joseph what it means, they figure that they're safe. So conferring with one another, the brothers acknowledged their guilt towards Joseph, but Joseph understood what they said. In verses 21 and 22, the brothers acknowledge that they had wronged Joseph. Verse 21. Then they said to one another, "We are truly guilty concerning our brother, for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. Therefore, this distress has come upon us." And Reuben answered them, saying, "Did I not speak to you, saying, 'Do not sin against the boy,' and you would not listen? Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us." This is going back to the Noahic covenant after the flood, where God pronounced capital punishment. That the one who murders is going to be having his lifeblood also required of him. You'll find that in Genesis 9. That's a paraphrase. But you'll find that in Genesis chapter 9. And they're saying, yeah, God is disciplining us for what we did to our brother that he didn't deserve. And notice there's a double indictment here. Notice how it's set up. They said, first, "We are truly guilty." These are the brothers other than Reuben. Reuben is the one who is planning to intervene and planning to bring Joseph home to dad. And what did Reuben do? When they had him in the pit, he said, "Don't do any harm to him." So they've had the indictment first because of the pleas that are coming from Joseph, and then they have the instructions, the warning from Reuben, and they ignored all of this. And they're saying, it's taken a long time, but God is disciplining us for this. They are not running away from their guilt, are they? They recognize it. They recognize that they had done wrong. And they recognize that God has every reason to discipline them. And they look at this and they see it as divine discipline. That doesn't mean that they're saying, "Okay, I'll volunteer for the firing squad." They're still trying to figure out, is there any way we can get out of this? Well, in verses 23 to 24a, Joseph understood them. So he was driven secretly to tears. Verse 23 through 24a. But they did not know that Joseph understood them, for he spoke to them through an interpreter. And he turned himself away from them and wept. Joseph knows, and he's going to at a later point say that they intended this for harm to him. But God intended it for good. Joseph knows at this point that there has been a change in these brothers. God has obviously been working in the lives of these brothers over this period of time. But is that anything new with God? Remember how Esau was ready to kill Jacob for having stolen the birthright and the blessing. So Jacob ran away. And when Jacob came back, what did he do? He sent all sorts of herds in front of him to try to bribe Esau. And what did Esau say? "What's all this stuff? I don't need it. I've got all that I want." And this also makes us think about the conversation that Cain in the book of Genesis had with God. God told him that sin was crouching at the door, but that he could overcome it. Cain wanted to kill Abel. And God said that it was within his power not to succumb to that temptation. But Cain was in a hurry, and so Cain murdered his brother. But as we look through Genesis, we see many times that God has brought about reconciliation between parties that weren't getting along. Remember how Laban and Jacob weren't getting along. But then Laban pursued Jacob, and God gave him a dream, saying not to say anything good or bad to Jacob. And he refrained from doing any evil to Jacob, the evil that he had undoubtedly planned to do. Well, Joseph sees the change, and he cannot yet reveal himself, but he's overcome with emotion from seeing this happen with his brothers. You know, all of us have had friendships. We've all had circumstances where things have gone horribly wrong, and we may have been the cause. But God, throughout this Bible, shows provision for restoration. And there's room for growth. There's room for forgiveness. We won't develop that further, but we're all familiar with the texts that speak about this. Well, in verses 24b through 26, Joseph took Simeon away bound, sent the others away with grain, but secretly returned their money to them. Verse 24b. Then Joseph returned to them again, after having wept secretly, and talked with them, and he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. Then Joseph gave a command to fill their sacks with grain, and then secretly to restore every man's money to his sack, and to give them provisions for the journey. Thus he did for them. So they loaded their donkeys with the grain and departed from there. And you can imagine, they are in a hurry. They want to get out of here before this Egyptian changes his mind. Just like God had told the Israelites in Moses' day to depart quickly after the Passover, and they did so. Remember how it was unleavened bread? It was to be eaten in haste, and they were to leave in haste. And you can imagine that they've done that because they don't want to be around if this Egyptian happens to change his mind. As we've said before, there are things going on that they are not aware of. They have no idea that their money is going to be put in the sack, the money that they use to buy this food. And this food is expensive food because the demand is real high, and there's only one place that has a supply, and that's Joseph. Well, in verses 27 through 38, the brothers later discovered the money, at least one of them did, and then they all did. And Jacob refused to send Simeon. Well, in verses 27 and 28, when they camped for the night, the first night, one brother found money in his sack, and they all feared that God was now disciplining them. They said, uh-oh, we escaped that guy, but what's this money doing here? It was an omen. It was not something they've looked upon favorably because, oh, we go back there and he's going to say he stole the money. I mean, this is not good. So in verse 27, but one of them opened his sack to give his donkey feed at the encampment, and he saw his money. And there it was in the mouth of his sack. See, they left in a hurry. They didn't open up their sacks. They didn't know what was in there. So he said to his brothers, my money has been restored. and there it is in my sack. Then their hearts failed them, and they were afraid, saying to one another, what is this that God has done to us? We've been framed. I mean, we didn't steal this money, but how are we going to explain this? The guy's already said we're spies, and if we go back there, he's going to say you're thieves, and that proves that you're spies. And then Dad isn't going to entrust us with another brother after we came home and there was no Joseph. Do you see why they're saying God has put us in a predicament? They're saying rock, hard place. They're not in a very nice situation. Well, they can't go back to Egypt because if they go back there, they're going to be accused as thieves and they wouldn't have Benjamin with them. So I guess since we've got all this food, we better get this food home so that our families can eat. So they head home. Verses 29 through 34, they told Jacob that the Egyptian arrested them as spies, kept Simeon, demanded that they bring Benjamin. Then he would give them food for land. So verse 29. Then they went to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, and told him all that had happened to them, saying, the man who is lord of the land spoke roughly to us and took us for spies of the country. And he's saying, well, that's the bad news. Do you have any good news? But we said to him, we are honest men. We are not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more. And the youngest is with our father this day in the land of Canaan. Then the man, the lord of the country, said to us, by this I will know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers here with me, take food for the famine of your households, and be gone. And bring your youngest brother to me, so I shall know that you are not spies, but that you are honest men. I will grant your brother to you that you may trade in the land. So they're saying, we're in a real predicament, and we ended up leaving Simeon behind because he said we're spies, and he arrested all of us, and he kept him, and he let us come back with the food, but told us that we've got to bring Benjamin. And you can just imagine what Jacob is thinking here. And they've tried to polish this story up and make it as persuasive as they possibly can, but Jacob's there saying, why did you even mention that you had a younger brother? Well, we didn't know that he was going to require us to bring him. We just were telling him what we thought we had to tell him. Haven't I taught you to trade camels better than that? He's saying, you guys don't know how to bargain. What? It was bad enough when you were sitting there looking at one another. Now I sent you out, and look at how you've really messed things up now. So they've told the story. And Jacob isn't very persuaded, is he? He's saying, what a mess. You send these kids out to do a man's job, and oh boy, we've got a problem now. Well, everybody still is hungry because they've run out of food, so it's time to break open the grub. So everyone opens up his sack, and verse 35, they open their sacks, and became fearful when they saw that all their money had been returned. And this time, it's not just the brothers seeing it, it's Dad saw it too. Then it happened, as they emptied their sacks, that surprisingly, each man's bundle of money was in the sack. And when they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. I said, well, that was going to be a pretty serious felony for one of us to have stolen this. But what do we do now with the whole kit and caboodle being stolen? Well, this is major bank heist. They're really going to be after us. They probably have an all-points bulletin out for us. And how are we ever going to go back there? And on top of that, how are we ever going to persuade Dad to send Benjamin with us? He's going to say, I can't entrust you with him. I mean, look at what happens. I send Joseph out after you, and he doesn't come back. I send you out, and you leave Simeon behind. And now look at this fix. And I'm going to send Benjamin out with you? You have got to be kidding. Basically, it's like they've been crying wolf. 10 sons went north, and a beast got Joseph. 10 sons went to Egypt, and an Egyptian got Simeon. If 11 sons go to Egypt, what would get Benjamin? This is the thought process that's going through Jacob's mind. And he says, 10 minus 1 equals 9. 9 minus 1 equals 8. 8 minus 1 equals 7. Pretty soon, no more sons. I can't keep sending sons out if every time I send them out, they end up leaving one behind. There's no way I'm going to send Benjamin with them. Well, in verses 36 to 38, Jacob makes this clear. He blamed them for losing Joseph and Simeon, so he would not send Benjamin with them. And Jacob, their father, said to them, "You have bereaved me. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And you want to take Benjamin. All these things are against me." Then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, "Kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you, and put him in my hands, I will bring him, or put him in my hands, I will bring him back to you." But he said, "My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, then you would bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave." He is essentially saying to them, "You've cried wolf too often." He said, "Some beast got Joseph. Some official got Simeon." Does it really sound like Jacob believes them? Does it really sound like he's ready to entrust them with anything big? And he's saying, "I am going to die in absolute misery because of my losses, especially now if I were to lose Benjamin." Now, what an ill-advised thing that Reuben said. You can eliminate 2 grandkids if I don't come back with him. As if Jacob's saying, "Yeah, that'll make me happy." But you can see how desperate they were getting to try to persuade Dad. I mean, it's just not going well. But I'm sure Jacob was thinking, "Yeah, and I sent them to negotiate grain. Look what happened." Let's take a look at verse 1 of chapter 43. "Now the famine was severe in the land." It didn't go away. Remember, it's a 7-year famine. "And it came to pass when they had eaten up the grain which they had brought from Egypt that their father said, 'Go back, buy us a little food.' But Judah spoke to him, saying, "The man solemnly warned us, saying, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.'" What is going to persuade Jacob to send Benjamin? Mother Hubbard's cupboard. Being hungry was the thing that was going to persuade him. He was not going to be persuaded by their words. But when he reached the point of desperation, Benjamin was going to be dead anyway. He was going to starve to death, wouldn't he? So if he was going to starve to death, well, I guess maybe we need to send him. And so we'll see that next week. But these sons didn't have all that much trustworthiness. You can imagine, they did lie about Joseph, did they not? And Dad must have thought, there's something they're not telling me. So now when they say, they left Simeon behind because that official took him, they're not all that believable, are they? They have a track record here, and this is a time that they're trying to prove that they're honest men to Joseph and to Jacob. And guess what? They have a track record of not being honest men before both Jacob and Joseph. It is very interesting how the shoe is on the opposite foot at so many points in this passage. Let's conclude with a word of prayer. Father, we do thank you for your word. And we thank you for seeing how you have provided for this family. A very undeserving family, but one that you had made promises to. And they are indeed, for the first time in this book, starting to think like family. They are starting to realize that they had obligations to Joseph and had let him down. They now had obligations to their wives, to their children, to Simeon, to Benjamin, to Jacob. They are starting to think like family. They are starting to think like your chosen people should think. Through it all, though, we see your underlying faithfulness. And that was the basis upon which they were to think like family. We pray this in Christ's name. Amen. Any questions? Babette? At this juncture, they were planning to do so. They ultimately did so. Right. But they went away and they were not lying to Joseph. They weren't doing like what happened when Dinah was raped. Because remember what they did then? They said, if all of you are circumcised, then we can all be friends and we'll intermarry and everything's all just fine. But they were figuring they're probably not going to be sleeping very well at night with the pain that they have. And they waited until they had had a couple of nights of not sleeping very well, and then they went in and attacked the village and killed everybody. Moses is telling us, at this point, they have become honest men. They're not trying to trick Joseph. They are trying to be above board with him. They ultimately did fulfill the things there, but they didn't do so immediately. They didn't have opportunity immediately. Because it isn't until verse 26 so that they were actually released. They were still in his custody.
But in my mind, it's like, why did Moses put it there then? Why did he say, and they did so?
Because what he's telling us is that they were not speaking with forked tongues. They ultimately did so. Yeah. They were thinking like family at this point.